Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So today we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter number 16, a description of Jambudvip. Is the mantra written anywhere? So we're... Alright. Okay. Yeah, it's a little difficult to chant it responsively when it's prose. So I will just read. You can hear nicely. You become purified by the Sanskrit.
Rajovacho uktastvaya bhumandalayam visheshaya vandajishtapati yatra chashau jyotisham ganaishchandrama vasaha drishyate.
Raja Uvacha, Maharaj Parikshit said, Uktoha, already. There's also a chapter summary, which comes just before this text. Was that, I guess you didn't read the chapter summary yet. Well, we'll just read the text, that's all right. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. King Parikshit said to Shukadeva Goswami, O Brahmana, you have already informed me that the radius of Bhumandala extends as far as the sun spreads its light and heat, and as far as the moon and all the stars can be seen. Purport. In this verse it is stated that the planetary system known as Bhumandala extends to the limits of the sunshine. According to modern science, the sunshine reaches Earth from a distance of 93 million miles. If we calculate according to the modern information, 93 million miles can be considered the radius of Bhumandala. In the Gayatri Mantra, we chant Om Bhur Bhuvasva. The word Bhur refers to Bhumandala. Tat Savitur Varenyam. The sunshine spreads throughout Bhumandala. Therefore, the sun is worshipable. The stars, which are known as nakshatra, are not different suns, as modern astronomers suppose. From Bhagavad Gita 10:21, we understand that the stars are similar to the moon. Nakshatranam aham shashi. Like the moon, the stars reflect the sunshine. Apart from our modern distinguished estimations of where the planetary systems are located, we can understand that the sky and its various planets were studied long, long before Srimad Bhagavatam was compiled. Shukadeva Goswami explained the location of the planets, and this indicates that the information was known long, long before Shukadeva Goswami related it to Parikshit Maharaj. The location of the various planetary systems was not unknown to the sages who flourished in the Vedic age. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya. So, according to modern scientific understanding, we Hare Krishna people are nuts. They think we're nuts. Because we are claiming, according to Vedic astronomy, there's only one sun, there's only one body which is emanating light in the universe, and that's the sun. You see, they say there's many suns out there. All the stars are various suns. But our Vedic understanding is just as the moon is reflecting the sunlight. It's not producing its own light. The moon is reflecting the sunlight. In the same way, the other shiny objects that we see in the stars in the sky at night, you see, they are reflecting the sunlight. So the question is, are we nuts? Or are the scientists nuts? There was some essay like that by Prabhupada called Who is Crazy? The difficulty is, we are still skeptical ourselves. Prabhupada told us in Los Angeles. He said, yes, Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, and you were thinking, maybe? You see, the problem, actually, we still have this Mr. Skeptic is still sitting in our own hearts. So the fifth canto is very challenging for that Mr. Skeptic sitting within our hearts. It's a big, big challenge. You see? Because from the modern day viewpoint, the descriptions of the fifth canto are absolutely outlandish. Absolutely outlandish proposals. All these descriptions. Mount Sumeru, a mountain made of gold. The chapter summary goes into some details about that. You know, 16,000 yojas, what is it? We'll read the chapter summary, because, I mean, this will give us an idea of what we're getting into here in chapter 16. While describing the character of Maharaj Priyavrata and his attendants, Shukadeva Goswami also described Meru Mountain and the planetary system known as Bhumandala. Bhumandala is like a lotus flower, and its seven islands are compared to the whorl of the lotus. The place known as Jambadweep is in the middle of that whorl. In Jambadweep, there is a mountain known as Sumeru, which is made of solid gold. The height of this mountain is 84,000 yojanas. Now, yojana is about 8 miles, so we're talking a pretty tall mountain there, and it's solid gold, you see. The Vedic understanding is certainly much more attractive than the scientific understanding. They don't have a mountain of gold. We have a mountain of gold. We got a better astronomy than they do. I mean, that's a pretty big chunk of gold sitting out there. You see. Wow, 84,000 yojanas high, mountain of solid gold. Its width is estimated to be 32,000 yojanas at its summit. In other words, this is a mountain. Usually the mountains are broad at the base and they're narrow at the top. But this one's just the opposite. It's broad at the top and narrow at the bottom. Now sometimes we see the mountains are broad at the top and broad at the bottom. I saw one mountain here in Bombay. In the middle of the city, there's this mountain just sitting there. It just goes straight up and it's flat on the top. And the other, near Juhu, we saw one mountain I was amazed to see. But here's a mountain which is big and flat at the top and narrow at the bottom, Mount Sumeru. It's 32,000 yojanas at the summit. And remember, that's 8 miles times 32,000. We're talking a big, big area up there on top of Mount Sumeru. And 16,000 yojanas is at its foot. On the southern side of the land, known as Ilavrita Varsha, are the mountains known as Himavan, Hemakuta, and Nishadha. And on the northern side are the mountains Nila, Shveta, and Shringa. Similarly, on the eastern and western side, there are Malyavan and Gandha Madana, two large mountains. Surrounding Sumeru Mountain are four mountains known as Mandara, Meru Mandara, Suparshva, and Kumada, each 10,000 yojanas long and 10,000 yojanas high. On these four mountains there are trees 1,100 yojanas high. That's a tree which is 8,800 miles high. Can you imagine how tall that tree is? It's can't even imagine. You see, that tree is over a, it's a mile and a half tall. Oh, wait, wait. No. I'm just thinking of feet. 8,000 miles. Wow, it's incredible. It's difficult to conceive. That's why my mind is thinking in terms of 5,000 feet. Well, it's a mile and a half high. That's kind of conceivable. But no, this is totally inconceivable. 8,000 mile high tree. There are lakes made full of milk, honey, sugarcane juice, and pure water. These lakes can fulfill all desires. There are also gardens named Nandana, Chittaratra, Vaibrajaka, and Sarvatobhadra. On the side of Subarsha Mountain is a Kadamba tree with streams of honey flowing from its hollows. And on Kumuda Mountain there is a banyan tree named Shatavalsha, from whose roots flow rivers containing milk, yogurt, and many other desirable things. So there's not only one river, but plural rivers are coming out of this tree. Surrounding Sumeru Mountain, like filaments of the whorl of a lotus, are 20 mountain ranges such as Kuranga, Kurara, Kushumba, Vaikunta, and Trikuta. To the east of Sumeru are the mountains Jatara and Devakuta. To the west are Pavana and Pariyatra. To the south are Kailas and Karavira. And to the north are Trishinga and Makara. These eight mountains are about 18,000 yojanas long, 2,000 yojanas wide, and 2,000 yojanas high. On the summit of Mount Sumeru is Brahmapuri, the residence of Lord Brahma. Each of its four sides is 10,000 yojanas long. Surrounding Brahmapuri are the cities of King Indra and seven other demigods. These cities are one-fourth the size of Brahmapuri. So the question is, how could it be possible? If we are, that's the question we would have with our, because we are conditioned by the modern scientific viewpoint. We're thinking, how could this be possible? How could it be true? We, as disciples in Prabhupada Sampradaya, we accept it as true. We put our faith that Prabhupada has said, therefore it's true. But we're wondering, how could this be true? You see? How could it possibly be true? It is true. But we need to understand how is it is true. You see? If we don't understand how it's true, then we are blind followers. And you know that blind following is condemned in the Bhagavad Gita. So we have to at least try to understand how it's possible that this could be true. Even if we can't succeed in doing that, at least we must try to understand how it's possible. In other words, how is it possible that this material world could be constructed in a way which is completely unknown to the scientists? Well, we have to go back to the Sri Upanishad. We have there the four defects. What are they? The tendency to be illusion? And because, well, no. The first thing is imperfect senses. You see. Because our senses are imperfect, then what is the result? You have the tendency to be illusion. Just like I may hear some sound sitting here in the temple room. And I'm thinking it is something. But actually it's not that something. It's something else. You see. Because my senses are imperfect. I can see this wall, that I can't see on the other side of the world. You see, that is an imperfection of the senses. With Krishna's senses, he can see the wall, he can see through the wall also. He can see what's on the other side of the wall. So our senses are imperfect. And because of that, we have the tendency to be illusioned. And if you're illusioned, what do you end up doing a lot of? Make a lot of mistakes, isn't it? But in spite of making so many mistakes, day in and day out, mistake here, mistake there, mistake everywhere, in spite of making so many mistakes, what do? We stubbornly cling to this idea that I am very advanced, I am very intelligent. And that is called cheating. You see? So these four defects are there, as described in the Shiyasha Upanishad. You see? Imperfect senses, tendency to be illusion, committing mistakes, and then cheating. So, the modern day vision of the material reality is coming to us from persons who are under the influence of these four defects. That's it then. All they're doing is they're taking their imperfect senses and expanding them out a little bit with a microscope, a telescope, this scope, that scope. You see, so many scopes, trying to scope out what's going on. But because all they've done is taken imperfection and amplified it a little bit. If you take an imperfect sound and you put it in an amplifier, it's still an imperfect sound. All you did was amplify imperfection. You didn't make it perfect. You just amplified imperfection. That's all you did. There's some horrible song, this cacophonous song, it's just, you know, painful to hear it. Amplifying it doesn't make it any better. It makes it even worse, you see, actually. Better to keep it very soft. So they take the imperfect senses and they amplify them, that's all. So it's better to be, if one is in the realm of mental speculation, it's better not to think so much, not to exert your brain so much. Better not to. Because all you will do is make trouble, that's all. Like, if you're an ass, it's better not to go braying, you see. Prabhupada says the ass is braying. Hee-haw, hee-haw. He's thinking, this is very nice philosophy. He's very proud of the sound of his hee-hawing, the ass, you see. It's better he just be quiet, you see. So these scientists, it's better they just be quiet. They go on speculating about what is reality, you see, what's out there in the universe. We usually hear about the spiritual world because that's our destination. And since the scientists don't even have any clue that there is a spiritual world, they have nothing to say about it. So we have a monopoly when we talk about the spiritual world. But when we come to the fifth canto, now the Bhagavatam is giving a detailed description of the material world, and that's the scientists' domain, at least I think it is. And they think they've got it, you know, they're figuring it out pretty well. But actually, it's speculation. I one time went to a gathering at the University of Florida. They had one scientist come in an evening program, and they called all the science students in the whole university. There was thousands of science students gathered to hear the guru, some scientist from California who was propounding that there are black holes in outer space. Of course, I know there are black holes in the scientists' brains. They're full of black holes. That's a fact I have scientifically observed. There are black holes in this universe. They're going around in the skulls of the scientists. But anyway, this esteemed PhD was describing the black holes, not just verbally, but he had a whole multidimensional thing, you know. A little pointer, and it was, you know, a big display and sound effects. It was very attractive, you know. Full-on Hollywood production. So, the students were just eating it up. Yes, Maharaj, yes, Maharaj, yes, Maharaj. Like that, you know. Good, yes, good day, whatever you say. They were just like in awe, you know, to hear all about the black holes in outer space. So finally it came time for the questions. And there I was, in those days I was a young brahmachari, clad in my flashy saffron. And you know, all the students, they were raising their hands in great awe and reverence. They were submitting their questions to the great guru, the great scientific guru. Of course, my attitude was a little different. I stuck my hand up also. And finally, I got recognized finally. And I said, or I asked rather the esteemed PhD, I said, is what you're saying, this black hole, is this a theory or is it a fact? He said, he paused briefly and said, I think it's a fact. And then a few more questions came in. And then again, I got my hand up. And I said, throughout the history of modern science, we have seen that one theory comes into popularity for some time. And then another theory comes in and replaces it. So how do we know that your theory will not be replaced by another theory? Now, he had just said it was not a theory, it was a fact. So it was a trick question. I was now labeling it as a theory in defiance of his statement that it was a fact. And actually, he took the bait. He said, I hope it is, because then I hope it is, because then we will be making progress. In other words, I hope my theory is defeated by another theory, because that is the progress of science. So just see what a cheater he is. He is saying it's a fact, and now he's admitting that when it's finally proven to be fallacious, that will be the advancement of science. Of course, we had already advanced science that evening by demonstrating that it was indeed merely a theory and not a fact. Prabhupada's teachings had actually advanced science that night, the real march of science, by exposing this his false claim that it was a fact. You see? So, these scientists are constantly rewriting their version of reality, constantly writing, rewriting, rewriting, always revising their vision of the universe. But we Vaishnavas, we are not revising, you see. We are not revising. We are not saying that Prabhupada is from, you know, a different era, and he doesn't really understand the modern world, and we have to change now our vision and revise Krishna consciousness movement to meet the modern world. No, that's completely bogus. There are people trying to do that who claim to be followers of ISKCON. You know, we have to have man-to-man marriage now, you know, gay marriages, so much garbage. People are, because they don't fully accept the absolute vision of the Bhagavatam. They think it's some relative thing, you know, it was good for us, it helped us become moral, or some convoluted idea like that. But no, this is the absolute truth. We have to have complete faith that each and every word of the Srimad Bhagavatam is the absolute truth. We may not understand how it is true, but I can guarantee you we will understand how it's true. We will. This is a process which is twofold process. There's bhakti and Vedanta. You see, there's there is jnana or knowledge, and there's also bhakti. Now what comes first? A.C. Bhakti Vedanta. You see, bhakti comes first. If you try for Vedanta or jnana without bhakti, that's what the scientists are trying to do. This is called Aroha Pantha, the ascending method. They're trying to pick themselves up by their own empirical bootstraps. Prabhupada gave me Texas. He said, in my initiation letter, he told me to preach in Texas. Of course, I preach all over the world, but my base is in Texas. And in Texas, we have a saying that the cowboys there have these boots with straps in them. They're hard to get the boots on, so they have these straps so you can get some special deals and, you know, slide your foot into it. It's a real austerity. Of course, we don't wear those. But it said you cannot pick yourself up by your own bootstraps. In other words, you can't reach down and grab your boot and pull it up and pull yourself into the air, you see. Somebody else could, another person could grab your, some power, strong person could grab your bootstraps and pick you up, but you can't pick yourself up by your own bootstraps. So in the same way, we cannot pick ourselves up or enlighten ourselves with actual knowledge through mental speculation. We can't pick ourselves up by our own philosophical bootstraps or empirical bootstraps. It's not possible. The scientists try to do that. The ascending method, it's called. Inductive logic. The actual method of becoming liberated, becoming enlightened, is to take the avaroha pantha, the process of descending knowledge, which is called deductive logic. We take that knowledge coming. Practical example that Prabhupada gives is this. You can take this point, all men are mortal, you can take it from the inductive or the deductive perspective. From the inductive perspective, you say, well, it may be true, it may not be true that all men are mortal, but let me start doing a survey. I will start going out, you know, in my neighborhood, and I'll cover this neighborhood, then I'll go to the next neighborhood, I'll go door to door. And I'll see if there's any man who is immortal. If I can find about someone, so you wander the earth, you're looking. But even if you've spent your whole life and still you have not exhaustively pursued every single place where you can investigate it. It's not possible. That's the inductive method. But the deductive method is you take it as a given fact that all men are mortal, and then immediately you have perfect knowledge about every man. Well, this man is mortal, this man is mortal, this man is mortal, this man is mortal. You see. Of course, we're talking in the material platform. We know that we're immortal in the grace of Krishna. But this is the point. So, the scientists, they are taking this Aroha Pantha process, the inductive logic, you see, trying through their own empirical observation and their own speculation to come up with a perfect description of reality. So the amazing thing is that not only is there an incredible spiritual world, which is inconceivably wonderful, even this material world, there's far more out there than we know, than we can see with our, you know, telescopes, microscopes, etc. It's incredible. A banyan tree with rivers coming out of it, a mountain, a tree 8,000 miles high. It is described how Arjuna, he went into an area of the Himalayas, which is not actually visible now, you see, in our modern day geography. So the point is, even materially, we are getting a very narrow, constricted vision of what's in the material world. Nor are we become lusty, The more we become under the influence of anger, the more we become under the influence of greed, our vision becomes more and more and more clouded. Just like the air here in Mumbai is very clouded, very dirty air. The water is horribly filthy. You see, you drive by some water and it's just horribly filthy, you see. So our consciousness is like them, horribly filthy. And therefore we cannot see Mount Sumeru, that gold mountain. We're not able to see it right now. We're not able to understand Jambudvip, Bhumandala, and all these things which are solid and substantial and real, just as real as here. You see? They're just as real. Just as real as this microphone, this wire. Mount Sumeru is just as real as this wire is. You see? Of course, we are not so much interested to find out where is that Mount Sumeru, because we want to go back to Godhead. But we have to understand that Mount Sumeru is a fact. It's not some mythology, some, you know, amazing story. It is a fact. Everything here is factual. As we advance in Krishna consciousness, these things will all be more and more making sense to us, understand, and comprehensible to us, how all these things can be true. So therefore we have to focus on our real business, which is becoming pure bhaktas, pure devotees. That's our real business. Sometimes my disciples ask me, they say, Gurudev, what is the best service? What service I can do? So my standard answer is become a pure devotee. See, that is our mission. Each and every one of us, we are simply meant to become pure devotees. That is our prime duty. That's what it means to take up the pathway of Krishna consciousness. That's our service, to become pure devotees. And to enable everyone else to become pure devotee also, to expand this Krishna consciousness movement. So pure bhakti is what we're after. We're not after the gold on Mount Sumeru. This is a greater gold, the gold of Krishna bhakti. Right now we're suffering. We're suffering under the influence of lust, anger, and greed. We're trying to lord it over that which belongs to someone else, so therefore what are we known as? We are known as thieves. If you would try to enjoy someone else's property, you're a thief, isn't it? So that is our position. We're thieves. Now we must get out of this thief-like state of consciousness. There's no option. We must do this. Absolutely must. It is an urgent situation. Why? Because we can die at any minute. We can die at any minute. We must live each and every day as if it is our last day on this planet, because one day it will be. Why every day? Every moment. So at every moment we must be kicking ourselves, striving for pure Krishna bhakti at every minute. Every minute. We should be very introspective. We should be looking at our own thoughts. Are my thoughts pleasing to Guru? Are my thoughts pleasing to Krishna? Are my thoughts pleasing to the Vaishnavas? Just imagine if everything that went through your brain would be broadcast on a big screen, so everyone could see what you're thinking at every minute. Would you have to hide in the closet in a state of constant embarrassment? Or you could come into the temple room and give a class in front of all the devotees, you see, without having to hide yourself in shame, you see. Our thoughts would be so pure that they can be broadcast to the whole world and we won't have anything to be embarrassed about. They should be completely pure thoughts. And if our thoughts are pure, then our words will be pure, our actions will be pure also. Everything will follow. Thinking, feeling, willing, acting. You see. However you think, if you think about it long enough, you'll feel like it. If you think about illicit sex long enough, you'll feel like having illicit sex. And if you feel like it long enough, you will to have illicit sex. And if you will to have illicit sex, you will have illicit sex. You see? So nip it in the bud. In the mind. You see? Don't allow the mind to indulge in activities, in mental, you know, in thought, which are against the principles of Krishna consciousness. We just got to make our mind blank, right? No. Mayavadi, they want to do that. Make the mind blank. You just got to clear all the thoughts out of the mind. Just clear the mind out. Just make the mind blank. Totally turn off everything. Turn off your mind. That's their philosophy. Just turn off the mind. Go into the state of no mind. It's not practical. The mind is nature by active. It is by nature active. The mind is very, very active by nature. Therefore, that raging wind of the mind, we have to engage it in Krishna consciousness. We have to absorb that mind 24 hours a day with unlimited spiritual desires. We have to become very eager to engage in the process of Krishna bhakti. And have so many desires. I want to do this for Krishna, I want to do that for Krishna, I want to do this for my Guru Maharaj, I want to do this for the Vaishnavas. You see, we should have so many desires how to advance our Krishna consciousness, how to advance this Krishna consciousness movement, how to make a revolution to turn the whole world upside down. You see, actually, we are sitting at this very minute at the most exciting moment in the history of the world. Prabhupada has given us everything we need to completely revolutionize the human society. Everything. We are armed to the teeth, as they said. We're fully armed, soldiers. In Lord Chaitanya's army, Prabhupada has given us a full arsenal, sufficient arsenal to conquer this entire planet. We're not talking about, you know, bombs and guns. No, this transcendental knowledge. With Prabhupada's books, we are armed that we can completely revolutionize the cultural educational revolution. We can completely revolutionize this planet. Totally revolutionize it. And Prabhupada said, this movement will go down in history for having saved the world in its darkest hour of despair. So do you think it's becoming more and more dark and despair situation on the planet? Just look at a headline when you're walking by a newsstand. See what kind of despair is going on. You can't just look at the people's faces. See how much despair is going on in the world. And it's getting worse and worse and worse. Those things are actually to the advantage of this Krishna consciousness movement. Because the more problematic, the more difficult this material life becomes, the more people will become inclined to look for some relief. And we have the relief. This movement of Sri Gaura Hari, it is predicted in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it will inundate the entire world, it drown everyone. Everyone will drown in this ocean of love of God. Krishnadas Kaviraj has stated like them. So when will it happen? Will we see this entire world inundated in our lifetime? Or will some other generation see the whole world inundated? Well, that's up to us. Prabhupada said we could inundate the whole world with Krishna Bhakti in 18 days if we just cooperate fully with him. 18 days. 18 days to save the world. You see? And by here in Mumbai, you know what Prabhupada told us? He said the world is being managed by rogues and demons. He says, now you make your life successful and you take the management. Can you imagine the responsibility that Prabhupada has given us? He wants us to take the management of this planet. That the world leaders will become so inspired by the preaching of the Prabhupada followers, you see. Prabhupada's men, his disciples, his grand disciples, they'll become so inspired by the preaching that the Hare Krishna devotees are doing. They will come and they will say, yes, please guide me on how I can manage my country in a way that Prabhupada will be pleased with the way I'm doing my service as the president or the prime minister. See, that's how we should preach. With such purity, with such power, with such conviction, without any doubting, with complete faith in every word of Srila Prabhupada. And then the whole world will come and say, yes, we've never seen anything like you, Hare Krishna people. You're the most compassionate, the most jolly, the most enlightened, the wisest, most wonderful people we've ever seen. We want to be like you. That's how I was attracted. People say, well, tell us about when you met Prabhupada. I didn't meet Prabhupada until I'd already met him. It doesn't make sense, does it? No, I explained. When I was a young countercultural radical in Berkeley, California, describe myself politely, the Makanlal Prabhu was inviting me. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, is coming to Berkeley tonight. You come and hear. I wouldn't go. Because I was a Mayavadi. I thought I was Krishna. I didn't want anybody to, you know, tell me that I was not Krishna, so I didn't go. But anyway, I actually met Prabhupada after a couple of years of trying to be Krishna and not being able to pull it off very well. I finally decided I have to surrender to God, not try to be God. So I was praying very sincerely to the Lord to guide me how I could serve Him. And at that time, Vishnu Janaswami came to Austin, Texas, and introduced our movement there. And from him, hearing about him and seeing him, I was just amazed to see this person, Vishnu Jana Maharaj, was amazing. He was so compassionate. He was so blissful. Every moment was like a festival in his presence. Just being with him, you felt like you were in a celebration. A big festival was going on, just his mere presence. So when I saw Vishnu Jana Maharaj, I knew his guru must be really something. If he can be this enlivened, this compassionate, this knowledgeable, this sweet, then just imagine his guru. So in that way, I actually, through him, then I understood Prabhupada. I have to be Prabhupada's disciple also. I must also become a disciple of this person's guru so I can become like him also. I wanted to be like Vishnu Jan, you see, Vishnu Jana Maharaj. So that I actually met Prabhupada before I met him. By hearing about him, by seeing how he was in, what impact he had on his followers. And then after accepting Prabhupada fully as my guru, then I got to see him. So Krishna spared me any aparad of being in his presence in an offensive Mayavadi, I am Krishna mentality. You see? Krishna blessed me. That when I finally did see Prabhupada, I was already his surrendered disciple. So the point is that we all have to become very pure, very fixed in Krishna consciousness. So that anyone who meets us, who comes in contact with us, will be absolutely amazed. I want to be like you. I have never met a person anywhere in this world like you, and I want to be like you. You see. That is called a representative of Krishna. Each one of us should master the art of purely representing our spiritual master, purely representing Srila Prabhupada, and purely representing Krishna wherever we go, to whomever we meet. You see, that's preaching. That's real preaching. Yad-yad-yad-shrati-shay-shas-tat-tare-ve-taro-jana. You see, so yad-pramanam-kurute-lokas-tad-anivartate. So in this way, we can defeat these rascal scientists. And we will actually be able to see things as they are. And as we're going on that Vaikuntha airplane, back to home, back to Godhead, you can take a look out there and see Sumeru. Oh yes, there it is. Prabhupada is right. There is that gold mountain out there. But we won't want to stop off there for a visit on, you know, on Brahma. We won't be really interested to stop off at Brahmapuri. We'll just see, oh, there's Brahmapuri, there's Sumeru, yes, Prabhupada is right. Back to home, back to Godhead. So, we thank you very much for your kind attention. And we would like to ask if there's any questions. I'm just going to, maybe no one heard the lecture, so there's no question. You're all thinking, when is Pishadam? When is Pishadam? Let me get my hearing aids in. This aging body is encouraging me to get out of this material world. I'm going to need a hearing aid in Goloka Vrindavan.
Thank you very much, Prabhu, for your very wonderful presentation. The point was very clear that how we can have faith in Prabhupada's words. I also heard that you are preaching worldwide on the net.
Yes, yes.
Can you also speak something about your preaching?
Yes, so he's asked me to speak something about this, the internet preaching that I'm doing. Yes, it is actually a wonderful mercy that Krishna has given me and Prabhupada has given me. Back in December of 2002, I was thinking, I would like to distribute Prabhupada's books through the internet, so I made one web page. And didn't sell any Bhagavad Gita. So I got this idea that why don't you give them something for free? Because actually, you know, you can meet someone on the street and hand them a Bhagavad Gita, and your personality has a strong impact on them. But through the internet, it's very impersonal. You don't have, it's not so much, you know, it's much more removed and impersonal medium than direct face-to-face contact. So I got this idea that if I give someone, I have a self-realization course. Self-realization is a popular thing now. And all the Mayavadis are cleaning up all over the world. There's so many bogus gurus teaching bogus self-realization. It's, of course, this is the real science of self-realization. In fact, this is the ultimate self-realization. There's Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. So this Krishna consciousness is the ultimate self-realization. Brahman is not the ultimate. Prabhupada says Brahman realization is perfect, Paramatma is more perfect, and Bhagavan is most perfect. So the ultimate self-realization is Krishna consciousness. So I call it the ultimate self-realization course. And we put it out there on the internet, and people started signing up. And they started buying, and I say, this is the required text for the course is Bhagavad Gita as it is. So then they buy the Bhagavad Gita so they can, you know, they can take their course. And sometimes they'll buy a whole set of Bhagavatams also through the internet. Because that's the next thing. After Bhagavad Gita, then you go to the Srimad Bhagavatam. So anyway, we have, right now we have 20,000 people signed up. And I used to just be sitting in Austin, Texas in a little preaching center with hardly anyone coming. But now my wife and I, Vishnu Priya Manaji, she's sitting back there. We're traveling all over the world to meet our various students all over the world. And we do about 3 or 4 tours every year, and different, you know, North American tour, European tour, worldwide tour like we're on now. Because we have so many contacts around the world, and course, my computer comes with me. I'm always having to answer my emails, send out my daily thought for the day. Just like today's thought for the day. How many people are subscribed to thought for the day? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. About maybe 8 or 9 of you. Today's is called Invitation to the Unlimited Road of Golden, Invitation to the Golden Road of Unlimited Devotion. So it's an invitation to everyone to come on this wonderful pathway of unlimited bhakti. So in this way, they get a thought for the day, and they get a weekly lesson where they have to answer some question. Yeah, the main thing is, though, we cultivate the individual. Persons who are really serious will personally write and ask questions, and we cultivate them. We cultivate them in one-on-one cultivation. That's the most powerful aspect of the course, is the one-on-one cultivation. Because we're actually making disciples in that way. Successfully making disciples. And anybody who's interested to check it out, you just go to www.backtohome.com. That's the sign-up page. You'll see me sitting there with a big smile, inviting everyone to sign up. I explain on that sign-up page how my spiritual master introduced this knowledge which completely frees one from all suffering. And he told me that I should share it. So I'm doing that. Now, if you'd like to learn, you sign up here. It's very effective. People are signing up like anything all over the world. And there's no limit. The internet's growing, and every day more and more people are getting online. So we're just thinking how we can expand it more and more. We're really thinking how we can create a revolution on the planet to change people away from this horrible, sense gratification nightmare. How to attract everyone to join the Krishna consciousness movement. That's what we're trying to do. Thinking how we can attract them, how we can attract them. Because there's no happiness here. There's no happiness. It's just such a miserable, miserable situation. It's just an illusion of happiness, that's all. There's actually nothing there. There's no substance to their happiness. It's simply a mirage. It's like, okay, here, Prabhu, here's your prasadam, and I give you the shadow of a plate of prasadam. So here, enjoy it. And it's a shadow only. Wait a minute, this isn't prasadam, this is just a shadow of prasadam. Enjoy your shadow. You see? We're being told to enjoy the shadow of happiness. Real happiness exists, that is in Golok. This happiness of material sense gratification is simply a shadow of actual happiness. And we're being taught and brainwashed into trying to enjoy the shadow. But there is no satisfaction in the shadow. So within the e-course, we're trying to give the real thing. We're using the shadow, as they say, use the thorn to pull out the thorn. The internet is also the most degrading thing also right now. It's pornography everywhere, it's horrible. But we're using that thing which is degrading everyone to enlighten them also. Questions more? Of course, everyone here is already fully self-realized, so no one has any questions about how to advance on the pathway. Because you achieved prema already, right? Everyone's... Yeah.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, in TKG diary, I read that Earth is actually not a planet and something like it is Jambu Dweep or something Prabhupada was saying to Tamal Krishna Maharaj.
I can't quite hear. What is it?
It's a Jambu Dweep and it's not like a sphere. And the sun is moving around Meru or Mount Meru or something like that.
I can't hear. What is he saying? Can maybe you come here and just tell me without the microphone. Then I can hear. Yeah, that'll make it easier. There's something mentioned about the sun moving around Mount Sumeru. It has to be researched. So, that's all right. Yes, you can be researched. It's described like a chariot, the sun god going on a chariot around the periphery of the universe. He's circumambulating. The sun god is in circumambulation. So, yeah, these can be all researched. If you want to research them, you can do. Any questions more? Yes. How do I do what?
How do you advertise your website?
It's you go on the. This is all marketing now. This is supposed to be philosophy. What's going on here? Marketing. This is not a marketing session, but it's advertised in different ways. Krishna.com has a link to it. People go on the. We have an information-rich webpage, ultimateselfrealization.com, which also attracts people. The search engines will pick that up. It's just some technical thing. We also do a lot of word-of-mouth advertising. I have a student in Europe who owns one of the most popular radio stations in Europe. He puts regular announcements on the radio and telling people to sign up. So they hear they're on the radio and they sign up. European Hit Radio in Latvia is one of my students owns the radio station. So he broadcasts it on the air every day. Sign up, bhaktikam.com. In Latvian language, they advertise it. So there's different ways. Word of mouth, radio, search engines, a combination of things. My little card, my business card, we hand that out and meet people sometimes. So various ways. I have a TV show in the U.S., weekly show. We advertise it on the TV show. So it's different ways. Okay, so we thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jaya.